You're listening to episode 2 of the GDPR Guy, the Data Protection Officer. Welcome to the GDPR Guy, the podcast dedicated to helping your organization comply with the General Data Protection Regulation. I'm your host, Carl Gottlieb, Data Protection Consultant and Director of the Security Solutions Provider Cognition. Each episode, I'll be providing information, insights and inspiration to help you on your GDPR journey. You'll find show notes and useful resources on the website, thegdprguide.com, as well as details for getting in touch with me directly. In this episode, I'll be discussing the role of the Data Protection Officer, what it is, who needs one, and designating the right person for the job. For GDPR compliance, generally most larger organisations will need a Data Protection Officer, or DPO, and most smaller ones won't. Here's the detail. A DPO is mandatory in the following three cases. Firstly, when the controller or processor is a public authority or body, or acting as one. Secondly, if the core activities of the controller or processor consist of processing operations which require regular and systematic monitoring of data subjects on a large scale. And lastly, if the core activities of the controller or the processor consist of processing on a large scale of special categories of data, so we're talking about highly sensitive data here, such as political affiliations or sexual preferences, or personal data relating to criminal convictions and offences. According to the EU's Article 29 Working Party, which is the group that creates the GDPR guidance, core activities can be considered as the key operations necessary to achieve the controller's or processor's goals. So really we're talking about the data processing is at the heart of the organisation's ability to operate. So think about a hospital or a private security firm that needs that data. Now, large scale is a woolly term, and it's up to the data controller or processor to determine whether it applies to them, based on factors such as the quantity of subjects, records, geography, and duration of the activity. So examples of large scale monitoring are hospitals, search engines, and insurance company customer data. Now, examples that do not constitute large scale monitoring are the processing of data by an individual doctor or accountant, or the processing of personal data relating to criminal convictions and offences by an individual lawyer. So you can really summarise the three types of organisations that need a DPO as government services, so think about a council authority here. Note that the Article 29 Working Party recommends private companies that provide similar public functions do nominate a DPO. So they're not strictly a government department or a local government department, but they might act like one. So think about organisations like a housing association, a water supplier, or an energy supplier. So secondly, think about if your data is at the core of your organisation and at large scale, so like a bank or a web analytics company or a hospital. If data is your lifeblood and at a large scale, then you will need a DPO. And lastly, if you handle a lot of sensitive data, you know, what we call special categories of data. So all three of these are where we will need a DPO. Now, a few other things to note. A DPO may also be mandatory under country state laws and other compliance regimes. Now, in the UK, as of April 2017, we're yet to hear this local country guidance for the UK in any other EU country, but that will be coming. Now, if an organisation is not mandated to assign a DPO, but does voluntarily, then the requirements of the DPO are the same as if the role was required in the first place. Now, for organisations that decide they do not require a DPO, the Article 29 Working Party recommends an internal analysis of this decision is carried out and documented to demonstrate all the relative factors have been taken into account properly. So what does a DPO actually do? Now, firstly, the DPO is not responsible. So I'll say that again, the DPO is not responsible or accountable for GDPR compliance. This duty falls on the organisation itself. The DPO is there to assist the organisation in maintaining data protection compliance. They should offer expert guidance, support data protection impact assessments and audits, and act as the intermediary between data subjects, the organisation's business units, and the supervisory authority. Now, the DPO will be front and centre in the event of a data breach and must have a deep understanding of the organisation's data protection. The DPO's contact details must also be publicly available for data subjects to access, for example, on a public privacy policy page on the website, and employees should know who the DPO is and how to engage with them. That's critical. Now, day-to-day, the DPO is the internal authority on data protection guidance for all activities involving personal data. So any new project, architecture, design or plan that includes personal data should have the input from the DPO. In turn, availability of the DPO for all teams is essential. Everyone needs to be able to get hold of them. The DPO's guidance does not necessarily need to be followed, but if it isn't, then this should be explicitly documented as to why and the risk assessments made. So the DPO can sit in any business unit where there isn't a conflict of interest and must have a direct feed into the top level of management. Now, the volume of work required from a DPO will vary massively from organisation to organisation. A smaller company may require 1 or 2 days of DPO input per month. Now, another may require a full-time DPO with a large supporting team underneath them. Under-resourcing the DPO role will be a very careless mistake, especially if the regulator comes knocking. Now, crucially, the DPO must be a true expert on the GDPR. Whether they are a trained lawyer, a compliance manager, or an external consultant, they need to know the GDPR inside out and how to comply with it in the real world. No specific qualification is required for a DPO, but in addition to expert GDPR knowledge, they must also have strong skills in information security, project management, business, and organizational nuances for administrative rules and procedures. So in summary, the DPO is your expert GDPR advisor, ready to work with project teams assessing compliance and happy to face the supervisory authority in the event of a data breach. The DPO has a wide skill set and reports directly to the executive board. So who should the DPO be? Okay, so you've decided you need a data protection officer for GDPR compliance. That's great. But who should it be? Well, on the surface, choosing a DPO can sound like a difficult problem, but really it isn't. The DPO has to be a named person, and it's your choice whether to be a full-time or part-time in the role. That'll depend massively on the workload. The best place to start is by looking at what roles you have in place already. And it's quite possible you actually already have a DPO somewhere in the organisation, or at the very least have informally designated someone previously. So do some digging to check this base isn't already covered. The next step is to exclude your operational IT and security personnel due to a clear conflict of interest. The GDPR states that the DPO must not be conflicted by having a dual role of governing data protection whilst also defining how data is managed. You can't be both a poacher and a gamekeeper. Now, in the real world, this means that an IT manager, an IT director, a CTO, a CIO, a security manager, they're all highly unlikely to also be a DPO. Additionally, you may find other positions that represent a conflict of interest, such as a marketing manager. So the DPO role is fundamentally about governance and compliance. In turn, this sits naturally with legal and security governance teams. So larger organisations will have an in-house lawyer who could be a DPO. They may also have a separation of operational IT security and security governance teams. So this separation usually results in the governance function sitting outside of IT, which removes that conflict of interest for a DPO. A chief information security officer, or a CISO, means many things to many people and could sit both inside and outside of IT. So don't assume that this position could automatically hold the DPO role without conflict. Knowing that the DPO needs to be a governance-type role is one thing, but you'll need to ensure that they are also recognised as a board-level advisor. The DPO is a protected role, in that you can't fire a DPO if they do their job too well, like informing the regulator of a breach. The DPO has to be a truly recognised as a high-level role inside the organisation and well-respected by all. Your DPO is critical to the success of your GDPR compliance, your protection of personal data, and your key person in the event of a data breach. Communication skills and gravitas are highly important assets for them to possess. Now, the subject of skills is a very pertinent one. The DPO is unlike any other role in the whole organisation in terms of what it requires. A DPO needs advanced knowledge on the GDPR and other relevant data protection laws. They need to understand the business, the data it handles, and how to interact with the customer base and the regulator. The DPO needs to understand data security to a great level and needs to be up to date with the latest threats to the business and the data it protects. So one overlooked consideration is whether a dual role DPO is really a wise move. You want the very best talent for your DPO, And for large organisations, it's rare to find an existing employee that is of high calibre enough that also has large amounts of spare capacity to take on the role. Under the GDPR, the DPO is not a small role, especially in the run-up phase to gaining compliance. However, many small to medium-sized enterprises are well suited to the dual-role DPO. I know of one personally with a legal counsel as their DPO, one using their head of compliance, and one is using their finance director. There's no magic answer and no one size fits all, but be prepared for your dual-role DPO feeling pressures on both sides of their job for time and attention. A common question is in which team to place a full-time DPO. Should they report to legal, to the CEO, or to the risk department? Well, who their line manager is or what dotted lines they have doesn't really matter too much as long as they are not conflicted by their reporting line and are freely reporting up to the board. Lastly, consider appointing a dedicated outside DPO consultant. They'll be named as your DPO and wear your corporate hat. So this kind of service contract can be a great choice where a DPO is needed, but no current employee can take on the role and hiring somebody will be excessive. Some organisations only need 2 or 3 days of a DPO per month. At my company, Cognition, we provide these virtual DPO services and have a number of customers where we are their named DPO. The virtual DPO can actually be a team of people, each providing their own specialities to make the greater whole. In this approach, a specific person is nominated as the lead of that DPO function. If you'd like some help on nominating your DPO or would like to hear about outside DPO options, then please get in touch. You can read more about the GDPR and find show notes for this episode at thegdprguy.com. And don't forget, if you'd like any direct assistance with your GDPR compliance, then please get in touch. I'll be happy to help. I've been your host, Carl Gottlieb, and I am the GDPR Guy. Thanks for listening.